The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, Overcoming Disruption. On November 25th, UNAIDS released a new report entitled Overcoming Disruption, Transforming the AIDS Response, which details the far-reaching consequences of recent international funding restrictions and lack of global solidarity, which have sent shockwaves through low- and middle-income countries heavily affected by HIV. But first, loyal listeners know we've been following events in Ohio, where efforts have been underway in the legislature to make major changes to that state's adult use and medical marijuana laws, as well as their regulations around hemp-derived products. Senate Bill 56 was approved by the Senate several months ago. Then, back in October, the House approved its substitute language for that bill, which sent the bill back to the Senate. The Senate rejected that language, which sent the bill to a conference committee to hammer out the differences. Well, the conference committee finally met on November 19th, and rather than hammer out differences, the committee rejected all proposed amendments. Well, a series of amendments were introduced, but each was then laid upon the table. That is, rather than discuss the amendment and have an up or down vote, the amendments were set aside without discussion. SB 56 was approved by conference committee on a vote of 4-2. It then went to the House, which approved the measure on a vote of 52-34. Bear in mind, this bill, this identical language, was originally approved by the House on October 22nd on a vote of 87-8. Why the big change? I really don't know, but here's the thing. A week after the House approved its substitute language, the Senate, on October 29th, rejected the House's substitute language unanimously, 32 nays, no votes in support. The House had to know this was going to happen. House members, certainly the leadership, must have known that the thing would end up in a conference committee. So my guess is that members of the House with any objections to the language of the bill were told to just chill, send it on through, and then everything would get taken care of in the conference committee, which obviously didn't happen. And that certainly would explain the change in the House vote. Although, again, I emphasize, I don't know if that's the case. But I imagine that House members will be asked about that during their holiday break. The Senate, meanwhile, went into recess before a vote on the SB 56 conference report could be scheduled. According to the Senate calendar, which I have in front of me as I record this, the Ohio Senate is scheduled to reconvene on December 9th. Presumably, they'll pick up the conference report on SB 56 at that time. And between now and then, House members and senators will get to hear from their constituents about all these major changes to the adult use and medical marijuana programs, as well as these regulations around hemp-derived products. We'll see what happens come December 9th. Again, this is a developing story. When there's more news, we'll report it here. Meanwhile, keep tuning in. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now to our top story. The 2025 funding crisis has thrown the AIDS response into turmoil, with massive disruptions to HIV prevention and community-led services around the globe, particularly for the most vulnerable. Abrupt reductions in international HIV assistance in 2025 have deepened existing funding shortfalls. The OECD estimates that external health assistance is projected to drop by 30-40% in 2025 compared with 2023, causing immediate and even more severe disruption to health services in low- and middle-income countries. Ahead of World AIDS Day, which is observed each year on December 1st, UNAIDS has released a new report entitled Overcoming Disruption, Transforming the AIDS Response. This report details the far-reaching consequences of the international funding reductions and lack of global solidarity, which sent shockwaves around the world. UNAIDS held a news conference November 25th to announce the report's release. Let's hear some of that audio. Here's Winnie Bianima, Executive Director of UNAIDS.
In the past year alone, Mali and Trinidad and Tobago have introduced criminalization of same-sex relations. Uganda's Anti-Homosexuality Act has intensified the proscription of same-sex relations, the prosecution. And Ghana has moved in a similar direction, with the parliament reintroducing the Human Sexual Rights and Family Values Bill this year. Mali has also criminalized transgender people, and Liberia is advancing an anti-homosexuality bill, which could include criminalization of HIV non-disclosure, exposure, and transmission. We see regression on rights. Burdens on civil society, including onerous registration procedures, restrictions on organizations receiving international assistance, prohibitions of some civil society activities are increasing worldwide. Today is also the first day of the 16 days of activism to end gender-based violence. GBV, including digital violence, pushes girls out of school. Out-of-school girls are more vulnerable to violence, to HIV, to exploitation, and to early pregnancy. Nearly one in three women, estimated 840 million globally, have experienced partner or sexual violence during their lifetime. This figure has barely changed since 2000. It's a crisis, sexual violence. In the last 12 months alone, 316 million women, 11% of those aged 15 or older, were subjected to physical or sexual violence by an intimate partner. In Kenya, UNAIDS modeling, our modeling shows girls who have experienced sexual and gender-based violence face a 63% higher risk of HIV infection. We see a close correlation there. Education is one of the strongest shields against sexual and gender-based violence. Girls with secondary education are up to 30% less likely to experience intimate partner violence. Recent UNAIDS modeling shows that girls completing secondary school could prevent more than 44,000 cases of GBV in 10 countries. In 2024, $18.7 billion was available. I'm talking now about funding for HIV. Last year, $18.7 billion was available for the global AIDS response. That was 17% below what was needed annually. Sub-Saharan Africa faces one of the largest funding gaps globally, making sustained and increased investment critical to prevent service disruptions and maintain momentum towards ending AIDS. Sub-Saharan Africa has a huge funding gap and depends very much on international assistance to meet, to respond to HIV. With 2030 resource, so with this huge funding gap, we need to sustain international assistance and support developing countries to raise more domestic resources and allocate to the HIV response. Despite these challenges I've mentioned, several countries are demonstrating resilience. So we have in our report a message of hope. For example, Nigeria, Uganda, Cote d'Ivoire, South Africa, and Tanzania have all committed to increasing domestic resources in HIV services. They are reallocating their budgets to close a gap. UNAIDS is working with more than 30 countries to develop and implement what we call national sustainability plans, HIV plans. Again, these are efforts to move away from dependence because of the cuts in international assistance to domestic financing. All these are positive, but we have to say that the gap can't be closed with domestic resources immediately. There are severe challenges. There are huge challenges too in raising domestic resources. We can talk about them if you want in the Q&A session. The rollout of the HIV prevention twice yearly injection called lenacapavir is moving. I talked about it here a couple of months ago. That is a message of hope here. On Friday, the Medicines Control Authority of Zimbabwe announced that it has fast-tracked approval of lenacapavir, clearing the injectable medicine in just 23 days. Zimbabwe's approval comes as a global fund, PEPFAR, and Gilead began rolling out lenacapavir in African countries with the first shipments delivered last week to Eswatini and Zambia. Each country received about 500 starter doses. Regulatory submissions are currently underway in Rwanda, Tanzania, Botswana, and several other high-burden countries. This initiative aims to reach 2 million people, which UNAIDS estimates could avert 50,000 new infections over 3 years. However, this is still a drop in the ocean, because UNAIDS estimates that 20 million people will need to be reached with this prevention, lenacapavir and others, in order to achieve the 2030 global HIV prevention target, that target of reducing new infections by 90% from 2010. So we're not close to the target. But hope, because we've started rolling out this very effective prevention medicine. In addition to this, UNITAID has signed an agreement with generic producer Dr. Reddy's to make lenacapavir available at $40 per person per year in 120 low and middle income countries starting in 2027. UNITAID announced an initiative to start rolling out in a number of countries, and it is working together with a number of partners. I believe this is also starting quite soon. The Gates Foundation has signed a deal with Indian manufacturer Hetero for a similar deal, again starting in 2027. All this is good news and gives hope, but it needs to be accelerated and scaled up. Gilead has signed royalty-free agreements with just 6 generic manufacturers. We need more generic producers to be included in these agreements, notably on the African continent, to reach more people and drive prices down even further, and also in Latin America and the Caribbean, where new infections are rising and where no company has been licensed to produce generics. There are also regional initiatives giving us hope, such as the Accra Reset and the African Union Roadmap to 2030 and beyond. These are initiatives to carve out pathways towards health sovereignty of Africa. President Mahama of Ghana describes the Accra Reset as a new vision of multilateralism, marking a transition from global cooperation based on aid and promises to one built on mutual accountability, innovation, and joint investment. The reset demonstrates how countries can transition from aid dependence to self-financed, resilient health systems. It positions health not merely as a cost, but as a driver of national prosperity and human security. In February this year, heads of state and government of Africa adopted the AU roadmap to 2030 and beyond. This stresses the importance of national ownership, community engagement, and the transition to self-reliance, health systems that are sustainable. All these regional initiatives give us hope too. I'm just returning from the G20 Leaders Summit in Johannesburg, South Africa, that ended on Sunday. In the declaration adopted by the G20 leaders, they recognized that investments in health can be a fundamental driver of stability, growth, and resilience. They underlined the importance of sustainable investment in resilient health system and pandemic preparedness and response. The G20 leaders recognized that the developing countries face challenges in accessing finance to funds to finance their development agenda, including health. One of the big challenges that they addressed was that of debt, that the majority of sub-Saharan African countries are in a category of close to debt distress or in debt distress, and that many of them, the interest payments they make, the interest, the repayments of debt are several times more than the total investment they make in the in their health systems. So the G20 leaders committed to support developing countries with a stronger, more effective debt restructuring process that can release fiscal space for these countries to be able to invest in the health of their people, including HIV, in the HIV response. The U.S. has released its new America First Global Health Strategy. That's also a message of hope in our report. This strategy signals continued significant investment in the global HIV response. The U.S. government aims to finalize bilateral agreements with around 70 countries to support co-investment in global health and stable transitions. Of these, there are about 20 countries which are where these agreements are HIV focused. These are mostly in Africa. The Global Fund's recent 8th replenishment conference happened on Friday on the margins of the G20 meeting, leaders meeting. This replenishment, co-hosted by South Africa and the UK, also generated renewed commitments with secured pledges of more than $11.3 billion. We thank these governments for their commitment, and additional pledges are expected from some more countries. However, we have fallen short of the target of $18 billion because of cuts from some of the major donors. For example, the US dropped from $6 billion to $4.6 billion, and others too. But what is hopeful is that there are countries that have increased their contributions to the Global Fund. For example, South Africa doubled its contribution and pledged $36.6 million. Ireland, India, and Spain also increased their pledges. And there are also some encouraging examples outside this multilateral initiative of Global Fund. There are also examples of South-South cooperation. I was in South Africa last week, as I said, and was present at the launch of a new initiative where China is supporting South Africa with a grant of $3.4 million focused on HIV prevention for young people and people who inject drugs. This is a new collaboration of South-South collaboration channeled through us of the United Nations. Similar agreements are being processed by China for more countries, including Iran, Lesotho, and a number of countries in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean. Today, here is our call to action, and I'm finishing what this long presentation to you and looking forward to your questions. Today, this is our call to action. 40.8, almost 41 million people are living with HIV worldwide. Almost 41 million. 1.3 million new infections occurred last year. And 9.2 million people are still not receiving treatment. So we have 40.8 million living with HIV. Out of these, about 31 million are on treatment. That's good news, that's success. But about 9.2 are still not on treatment. AIDS is not over. We have new infections, and we have millions of people still not on treatment. Not to mention those who are on treatment, but who are not virally suppressed because they are not taking it regularly enough. So the work is still there to be done. This World AIDS Day, UNAIDS is calling on global leaders. First, reaffirm global solidarity and your faith in multilateralism. Reaffirm your commitment to fight and end AIDS together as a world community. Our progress to date has been because the world came together. This weekend's G20 Leaders Summit and the Global Fund replenishment on the margins of this summit reinforces our faith in multilateralism. It is alive. It may be weakened, but it is alive and there, and countries can rise and strengthen multilateralism. Two, maintain funding for the HIV response. Here I'm talking about international assistance for countries that need it most, high-burdened, low-income countries in particular, but also highly burdened, middle-income countries. They need continued support in order to maintain their progress and also gradually transition to domestic financing. Still on the funding, domestic financing cannot grow fast enough to fill, I've said that already, domestic financing is growing but not fast enough, so we need international assistance to remain so that countries can grow their domestic resources. And on the question of domestic resources, we are calling on the G20 leaders, as they mentioned in their declaration, to move quickly to strengthen their debt restructuring mechanism, which is called the Common Framework, so that it can address the serious debt burden of developing countries who are choking on debt and are unable to invest in their health systems, including in their HIV responses. Third, we call on countries, we call on Gilead, the company that owns the technology of lenacapavir, to move to license more companies to produce to scale and so that the cost can come down further. License companies in Latin America and Caribbean, license companies in sub-Saharan Africa. Let every region be able to produce lenacapavir and so that we can move fast to drive down new infections. We call upon the governments and the funders, donor governments and multilateral funds like the Global Fund, to put more resources in prevention and particularly in rolling out this new medicine, lenacapavir, that could help to drive down new infections very fast and bring us closer to ending AIDS as a public health threat. So we need action on the part of the company in terms of licensing more companies, driving down cost, and we need more resources to support developing countries to roll out to all the people who need it. Third, uphold human rights and empower communities. We call on all governments to defend the right to health as a fundamental human right. This means standing firmly for bodily autonomy and sexual and reproductive health and rights of women and girls, ensuring that every person has the freedom and dignity to make decisions about their own body and health. We must push hard against a backlash on rights of sexual minorities, LGBTQ people, rights of girls and women to make choices over their own bodies, and rights to information and education about sexuality. These are at the heart of the success of the HIV response. And we must strengthen community-led action, because communities are at the heart of every successful response. We have been able to reach 31 million people because communities were there to reach the people, because they know the person who needs the services. So the space for civil society too has been shrinking. We call on governments to step up and continue to expand civic space and to enable communities to lead services for their people. Their voices, their leadership, their lived experience drive progress and accountability. This is our moment to choose. We can allow these shocks to undo decades of hard-won gains, or we can unite behind the shared vision of ending AIDS. Millions of lives depend on the choices we make now. This has always been about justice, about equality, about human rights, and of course about global solidarity, the world coming together to fight and end this disease. Thank you so much.
That was Winnie Bianima, Executive Director of UNAIDS, speaking at a news conference November 25th held by UNAIDS to announce the release of its new report entitled Overcoming Disruption, Transforming the AIDS Response. Find that report and a host of other information and valuable resources at the UNAIDS website, unaids.org. That's UNAIDS.org. World AIDS Day, this year and every year, is observed on December 1st. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policies and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long.
So long!
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.